Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half, the great actor Thomas Jane will join us. I'll tell you about a giant pick monument that you will not believe when you see it. And weird weather waking me up. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They're all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
This is Walk-Ins Welcome with Bridget Fettesy.
I love hearing people's stories of resilience and grit. This is why I created this podcast.
We are very excited to welcome Jim Gaffigan,
Yasmin Mohammed,
Glenn Beck, Tim Dillon,
Abigail Schreier,
Jeff Garland,
Ayan Hirsi Ali,
Sam Harris,
Heather Hying,
Jonah Goldberg,
Ben Shapiro,
Glenn Greenwald,
Sarah Shahi,
Colin Quinn.
If there's a culture of victimhood, then let's tell stories of grit and survival.
Subscribe and listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Thomas Jane, and comedian Hannah Berner. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now a man who was taxed with gas every time he shared an office or van with Kimmel, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. You got to get on. That's just for the woman to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
Please, and I quote, shut the fuck up forever.
Thomas Jane, man, I got to talk to him about that scene in Boogie Nights when he
great
went up
scene
to the house. It's just like,
all time great scene.
All time in terms of just contained
scenes.
Yeah,
the fireworks scene of the drug deal gone wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot that was him.
And he's beaked out the whole time.
Yep.
Oh, so good.
Great.
So good.
So right.
All right, so we'll talk to him about all that stuff. Lots of weird weather, thunder, lightning.
Yeah.
Now, I'm up in the foothills, and it was hitting real hard in the foothills. I was driving out here, the roads seemed dry and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we haven't
forth
gotten any rain.
But thunder, lightning, big time. I don't know if you guys got it.
I think we got 5 minutes of solid rain this morning, like on the west side.
I was out walking.
Did you get the thunder lightning starting at 5, 6 a.m.?
Reports are no thunder and lightning from my wife.
So I was going to say, when she was up for Orange Theory.
Well, she's in the Highland Games now because they've opened chair tossing.
She's not thrilled that I shared that story.
Well, it's never going to go away.
It makes us love her even more.
I admire spunk.
Passion.
Passion. So the thunder and the lightning was just going off at, starting, 5:30, 6 a.m.
Well, the water restriction started out here vis-a-vis what you can water your lawn, when, and for how long. So 5 good minutes of decent rain, and we'll take it.
Where does Phil stand on thunder? Does
well,
he even notice?
I was gonna say that. So Phil gets up, he sleeps with Sonny, then he gets up at 8, and then he moves his way into the living room, and then at some point he just lays down by the living room slider door that leads into the backyard
for
he
second
wants,
nap.
He wants to take a leak, and then he wants to sun himself.
Oh.
And so a couple things, because I did write down Phil. The thunder and the lightning definitely woke me up in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. which is something, I don't normally look forward to, but I realized the distinction is this is force majeure. This is act of God. This is not man-made. When I get awoken by the backup beeper mm-hmm. at 6:15 mm-hmm. on a Sunday, like, lightning. I'm like, oh, who the fuck is driving their fucking truck at this, or the leaf blower, the whatever it is. That's all induced by man. You know, this is act of nature and God. And even though it's equally as disruptive, it doesn't land the same way on me.
No.
I still wake up, but I'm sort of, oh, this is nature.
Yeah.
This is kind of, you know, it's the difference between a school shooting and and kids being in a bus that went over a ravine or something. It's like one
big difference.
Either you're not happy about either one, but one really sits with you as, oh my God, where are we as a race? You know, and the other's like, well, shit happens, man. So that's what my my reaction is sort of almost no reaction to being jostled out of bed at 4 in the morning. But because Chris said he got it in Long Beach between 3:30 and 4 a.m. So
yeah, and I'm a super heavy sleeper. It takes a lot to wake me up. That was the loudest thunder that I could remember.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cheated out of this.
In the foothills, I mean, bolts and cracks, and it was violent, which I enjoy. And
no trees split in half?
No, but at some point, Phil needed to be let outside, and then Phil walked outside. And it was more lightning and violent, ear-deafening thunder that came behind it. And Phil took his place out on the lawn, laid down, and didn't budge.
Wow. I'm starting to get worried that he's deaf.
No, because he hears it.
He hears the dinner bell.
If Sonny says, you know, it's din-din or whatever, he's up. If you so much as take a spoon and clank it against the side of a bowl in the kitchen, and he's on the other side of the house, he'll come trotting in. He thinks something's going down food. So he has very keen hearing. He's just so detuned that he just sort of lays there in the middle of the yard while thunder and lightning is all going off around him.
He's Buddhist.
Then I just thought to myself, yeah, that's his wiring. And then I realized, oh, that's us too. I know people, not as it pertains to thunder and lightning, but there's people that, you know, you can drive with them. You know, somebody's moving into your lane, like, ho, like, boom. Like, what scares me the most about driving with those people is not the car that's going into my lane. It's their reaction to it, which is big and over the top, or a car backfires and they jump, or you just come up, you come into the same room they're in, and like, oh, whoa, you know, it's like this weird, super
easily agitated,
tuned, tightly wound.
Yeah, tightly wound versus a very detuned. You know, Sonny's a very detuned guy. I'm very detuned. Others are wound up a lot. And same with dogs. You know, Phil is just completely, he's on one side of the spectrum, completely and utterly detuned. And then there's the other side, which is they need the vest on and they're under the sofa.
Remember when it became a thing, because I'd never heard of it before, where dogs and cats are being put on antidepressants and like on people medication? Funny, the people were never super chill people.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like, turns out both my cat's also on this.
Yeah, you know? I think
it's a self-selecting sampler.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of projection with pets and kids that parents that aren't detuned do as well. Mm. And maybe we saw a lot of it in COVID, you know, a lot of kind of transference.
Oh. Projection and reaction. I mean, pets will pick up on your energy, right? So if you're agitated, whatever it is, they're going to be a little more prone to that.
Yeah. I mean, Phil famously laid out in the backyard while a guy took a power wet saw with a diamond blade on it and literally just cut around him. Or was it, Chris, was it a jackhammer? He was laying out there while someone was busting up a slab, and he was laying 14 inches away from where the guy was jackhammering, and he couldn't bother to be moved.
Be more like Phil.
So, Dawson, I saw you raising your hand because you got dog.
Yeah, I was wondering if maybe it's a Labrador thing, because for the longest time, you know, there's a shitload of illegal fireworks around where I live. New Year's and the 4th
Jewish
of July.
Neighborhood.
Yeah.
And Boo has never had a problem with loud noises.
Mm-hmm.
Never had a problem until she just turned 13. So it's starting to...
All lab. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's definitely...
It's just starting to get it.
There's definitely a chihuahua and a lab wiring, but there's also kind of a wiring in just even amongst the breeds, even inside of the breed.
Yeah.
Like Phil is super chillax even for a lab.
Right.
But labs are definitely. And then you sort of get into breeds of people. Some are a lot zestier than others. I'll say euphemistically.
Here's what a dunce I am. I got up. Maybe it was because of the thunder and the lightning, but either way, I had to go pee, went to the bathroom, and I saw a flicker, which now makes sense. Putting two and two together, must have been lightning in the distance. I thought someone was in our backyard with like a flashlight or like a phone light or something, and I'm like, it kind of jostled me awake. I'm like, what's going on out there? And of course, it went away, and now I feel like an idiot.
We have Phil sleeping with what Chris is calling a wet bandsaw.
But that's what it's labeled as.
Oh, why can't we label?
No such thing,
Well, you'll tell
not
us.
Not really, no. Nobody has a wet bandsaw.
He could be, what's the square footage of that lot? He could be anywhere.
It's like a white noise machine.
Yeah.
I'm inside the house and the door's closed.
That is loud as shit.
And when we head out, you're going to, as I get closer, you're going to hear this thing fired up. He's also sleeping on top of a broom handle as well. It doesn't seem to bother him.
Get it, Phil.
There's so many other choices. Oh my God. Nope.
Now Phil's looking
now
at
he's
me.
Looking up.
They're still...
What do you want? I'm relaxing.
Yeah, so they're operating a circular saw with a diamond blade on it that's 2-3 feet away from Phil, and Phil's sleeping on top of a mop. And he's not moving.
So, that's a good dog.
Yeah, he also has a lot of extra flesh on his lower side that it will absorb a pine cone,
sure,
a conch shell, or anything he falls asleep on. But he's not even looking at the proceeding. He has his back turned to a large saw that's sawing behind him, and he's not interested or moving.
The head's back down.
Yeah.
What gives? What, does he like being around random people?
He loves randos. Anyone who shows up to work, he is heading down that hall hanging out with them. If the makeup lady shows up for some Tucker hit, he's at the door. He's waiting on her. I don't know if it's all about food, but... certainly comes across as exquisitely social.
Wow.
All right. So that was our Phil with wet circular saw. Sorry.
It was a bandsaw. Sorry. Wow.
I there is every tool exists, so there's the possibility of something called a wet bandsaw, but I do not own one. I do not know anyone who owns one, and I've never said wet and bandsaw put together.
Well, the ground looked wet. Maybe it was a wet picture with bandsaw.
There are wet tile saws, but again, that's a diamond circular blade. All right. So, Gina, I want to say for the early show on Friday, is it? Yeah. Dickie Barrett, Mighty Boston's, is going to be in Denver. He just hit up Mike. He's like, I'm going to be there. And so he'll come up on stage we'll talk to Dickie and all that he's been dealing with over the last few weeks and months, especially with all this COVID stuff. So that'll be an interesting discussion. Also, just Dickie's just the sort of epitome of a knock around good dude. Like, there's no better hang than Dickie. Funny, but doesn't try to impose it on you. Big laugher, tons of great stories. Just a great, anyone who's ever seen the Boston, just a great lead man, a great showman, a great performer. So you can look forward to seeing Dickie up there on Friday. Is it the 7 or 7:30? I'm not sure.
7:15 Mountain.
Nice.
I'm guessing that means a 7:30 start.
Are they off an hour and 15 minutes?
Let's get there. Early. All right. So now, Gina, you saw the play King James, which I didn't know about.
Fantastic. I will be shocked if it doesn't head to Broadway, if it doesn't win, if there's not a lot of Tony buzz around this thing. It's this great play called King James. And yes, it has a lot to do with LeBron James. And I can't remember the name of the writer. I can look it up. But he's written other stuff as well. But this is basically about two dudes.
Disrespectful.
Yeah, I know. Who meet at a bar, and one of them's got Cavalier tickets to sell back when LeBron's a rookie. And they're negotiating over the price. And long story short, it sort of blossoms this friendship that parallels.
Najeev Joseph.
Thank you.
So says my screen.
Yeah, he did a Bengal Tiger in Bangladesh. He's pretty well known in that circle. But
is this a musical?
No.
Oh, thank God.
And it sort of parallels LeBron leaving Cleveland and their friendship going through ebbs and flows, and fucking fantastic. And it starts with a DJ, this cool chick who's like off to the side. And so you go into the theater and it's like all this great music. Oh, yeah. And it's like the lights are going like the team's coming out, spotlight's going crazy.
What theater?
It was at the Mark Taper Forum downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic. And it's still running for like another 2 weeks. I highly recommend it. It's we were so impressed. I brought my husband because he likes musicals and stuff, but I like to, I don't want to force him to sit through anything he wouldn't like. So this was one of his Father's Day presents, and I thought, it's called King James. It's about his favorite athlete of all time. Let's go check it out. And it was absolutely beautifully acted, funny, well done on every level.
Wow.
Really,
so it's
really
going, you
good.
Think it's going to Broadway?
I would be shocked, because this is previews. And I told Andy, who doesn't understand the relevant, the significance of this, I've only done it a few times, do you understand that when this goes to Broadway and this becomes huge and this one wins a Tony for Best Play, you will have seen the original cast? Like, I know that doesn't mean much to the likes of you, but it's a really big deal. So if you're in L.A. and you got some time, these guys are fantastic.
Chris, take a dive on Mark Taper, because I've lived here my whole life, and I along the commercials I watched with the Super Bowls of motocross and the Orange County Pomona Fairgrounds with the dragsters and all the myriad of things that I was never going to go to, they would also have plays, Lenny and his amazing Technicolor jockstraps coming to town at the Mark Taper Forum. Everything was at the Mark.
Well, the Amundsen.
Back then, I think it may have been.
I think you're right. The Amundsen, the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and the Mark Taper, all right there together.
We would never go as a group.
Right.
But there was a lot of bands and plays and events that were taking place at the Mark Taper Forum.
Yep.
The Mark Taper Forum was not built when they built Staples Center or Crypto Land or whatever it is now. That I remember as a young person. So I don't know who Mark Taper was.
I have no idea who this guy is. He must have been extremely wealthy and philanthropist, because the imaging center where they do MRIs and everything at Cedars is the Mark Taper Imaging Center.
Well, he wanted to leave a legacy.
Around,
And it's great inside the theater, because it feels very 70s modern.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's beautiful with lots of mirrored walls
built,
and circular things.
Opened in 67. They must have broke ground in 65 or whatever. So it's my entire childhood. I've been hearing about the Mark Taper Forum and what goes on.
Have you literally never seen a piece of theater or performance, and that's it, Mark Taper, Dorothy Chandler, or Amundsen?
I'm sure if you talk to a few people in my life, maybe someone like Jimmy, he'd go, "What are you talking about? We saw Pippin there in 1999.
We saw Moving Out there."
Yeah, he might, but I highly doubt it. I don't know. Is it a 2,000 seater?
The Mark Taper is like a smaller circular, almost theater in the round.
Uh-huh.
The Amundsen's the big one. That's where we saw Book of Mormon and that kind of thing. But also, actually, do you have a picture, Ben, of the plaza? It's worth it just to go sit in the plaza. They got the big, beautiful fountains, the splash pad. It's you feel very fancy there.
740 seats. So
it's a
smaller theater.
The Dorothy Chandler's the Opera House, and the Amundsen's the big auditorium.
I try not to support the arts,
I know.
As you know, and especially ethnic arts. I try not to support that. But maybe I'll give it a look.
The plaza's beautiful. They have a big stage set up for free concerts.
So Mark Taper, this guy must have been around for a while. He was a real estate developer.
Oh, okay.
Chris will tell us. I guess his name's on everything, Dawson will.
He was born in Poland on Christmas Day in 1902. It was then part of the Russian Empire. Moved to England, around his 30s, had five companies there, moved to Long Beach in 1930.
Wow.
Hmm.
And then he just started building projects. Hold on.
When did he die?
Oh, my God.
1994.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Long run. But he, if we reanimated him and brought him back to current LA, he would never stop throwing up.
He'd be like, what did I give you this money for?
What the fuck happened to this place?
He founded Biltmore Homes and began building suburban housing for returning soldiers in Long Beach, wow, Norwalk, Compton, and mm-hmm, Lakewood. In all, he built 35,000 houses for low and middle income people as part of the largest housing project in the United States.
Fucking communist.
He would also head down to building and safety and try to pull a permit and then begin vomiting again. But and then there he is.
Philanthropically, Mark and Amelia Taper devoted much of their time to transporting hundreds of Catholics and Jewish children out of Nazi Germany.
This guy's a hero.
The Mark S. Taper Foundation was established in 1952 as a family foundation and remains active in philanthropic giving.
Wow.
I just hope there's no statues of him anywhere, because at some point that's going to have to come down because he had a lawn jockey in 1947. All right. Some point we're going to have to shift from slave owner to had a lawn jockey in front of their house, yeah, because we're just not going to be able to go back far enough to get to the slavery days. All right. We also, speaking of that, Juneteenth, they have a traveling sort of Juneteenth monument. There's a sculpture, a monument that's been traveling around. I think it's in New Orleans now. It was in Los Angeles.
Oh, I don't know anything about
Philly.
This.
Philly.
It's called All Power to All People.
Here
it is.
Seems all right.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. That's like from Spaceballs. We found shit.
A lot of people are relating it to Spaceballs.
It's a giant hair pick.
With the black fist on it.
Wow.
Which, my dad had coming up. When you bought a hair pick back in the day, they just put the black fist, power fist on it because they didn't see my dad coming.
Hell yeah.
So, first things first, whenever you do like all power to all people, like all the time, that's when you go, I care about the children of the world. It's like, all right, so do we. Now you got to get more specific. So I don't like that it's all people all the time, but then, the Afro pick is sort of weird because it sort of excludes a lot of black women who wouldn't use the Afro pick. I mean, there was Shirley Hemphill from Good Times. She definitely picked it out. But I'd say the ratio between the women and the men had to be 10 to 1.
It fell out of fashion for women.
Yeah, and also I don't know if it's a fitting tribute or tip of the cap culturally to, like, it's a comb. It has to do with your hair.
I guess it's just one, like, for Jews, Italians, you know, those of us with curly hair, we're supposed to be included in this, maybe.
But this is sort of a Juneteenth thing.
My first reaction was, this is bad parody. It's a bad joke. Yeah.
We've now entered into the realm where the Onion and the Babylon Bee are no longer, you can't tell the difference between what is parody and what is actually a $7 million state-sponsored, government-funded actual attempt at something. But it's a giant pick. And I'm also wondering about the vetting process. Like, you have to run this up a few people's flagpoles.
A couple schematics have
like,
passed around.
You know, like, hey, I got an idea for a giant sculpture to commemorate Juneteenth, and it's a tip of the cap to the African-American community, and it's like, so what is it? Is it the march with Martin Luther King?
Voting rights?
Ben, they're done that.
No,
Obama,
this is a comb.
Obama holding a comb?
It's called Afro-American, all right? Let me finish my thought. So they unveiled the giant pick.
28 feet tall.
I know that I shouldn't be speaking for anyone else's community, but it feels a little disrespectful.
That's what I thought.
It doesn't help is about all I got with the Afro pick. But listen, you know, if they're coming for Jefferson, this gives Whitey something to go after, too, you know?
It does look Photoshopped like an Onion article. Speaking of that, James Woods, I had to retweet him the other day because, like what you said, he said, as the Babylon Bee slips to second place in the satire marathon, the Atlantic had a headline that said, the heroism of Biden's bike fall. The president gracefully illustrated an important lesson for all Americans. When we fall, we must get back up.
That's fake, but that's funny. That's
it's not real?
No.
It's not? Shit.
I know, but it's funny.
I haven't heard it. It looks like
from the Atlantic.
I know, it's Photoshopped.
God damn it.
I know.
Thank you for telling me.
On Biden's fall, he blamed it on the toe traps that are on
he's like clipped in?
Cage.
Or?
Yeah.
He wasn't clipped in, but it was a toe cage.
Okay. It's a toe cage.
Clipped in is, you know, the bottom of your of the ride.
Now, you still have to negotiate that, but as I once said during the filming of Ordinary Extraordinary with John Ritter to the guy who's going to do the double flip on the BMX bike that had the buddy peg sticking out on all four corners.
Why bother?
What? You're cruising around at a very slow speed on, you know, this is not the Tour de France here. You're just kind of puttering around. You got the Secret Service guys puttering, you know, jogging next to you. Why the bike with the clips? I mean, that's something to navigate.
Yes, that's another
unnecessary
problem.
Detail.
Especially when you're at a stop.
It is, you know, it is necessary for
competitive level.
And or just higher level. Yes. I need to pick up the pace. I'm trying to tuck in and draft the guy in front of me.
Beat a time.
Yeah, it's really in the sort of beach cruiser department. Or just sort of bopping around with the wife in the Secret Service, it is an extra hindrance that could only cause trouble, and there's really little to no benefit at this level. Why? Why is that even on there?
I saw it.
And I'm always kind of wondering, like, I would be the guy to go, I'd be the Secret Service guy going, is that Biden's Huffy over there? Yeah. What's with the toe cage?
Get those out.
Came with the bike. I'd be like, pop them off. Because
well, but they look so professional.
You can't get
cool.
stuck in them, and you will go down if you do. All right. So let's see.
And at that age, for real, that could be a hip replacement.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm surprised he popped up as fast as he did. All right. Should we play Mar? Let's see. Thomas Jane's going to zoom in right at 2 o'clock.
1:30.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Screwed that up.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what I wrote down to talk about. Who is this Mark Taper dude again? Just trying to buy some time. All right.
Look up Dorothy Chandler.
Why don't we... Well, let me hit a spot here, and then we'll talk to Thomas Jane, who... That scene, I'm trying to think, Brian, you'd be a better guy to go to for this, but Gina, I'll buy you a little bit time. Sort of.
What do you want to know?
Mount Rushmore of scenes.
Okay.
I love Inglourious Bastards at the dairy with the milk.
Well, you're talking, okay, this is good because you're talking about tense scenes.
Or not. But
well,
just
your two examples so far are pretty tense.
Thank you. Or not. It can just be the funniest exchange, the scene that you thought, you know.
I remember seeing Boogie Nights for the first time, and I remember seeing that scene and being and fucking white knuckling it. Like, I was like, I don't know where this is going. I don't know who's gonna shoot first. I don't know what's happening in this scene, but it was highest possible stakes while still being grounded in reality, if that makes sense. Like, there's like, you know, the world's going to end, or you got to press the button to stop the nukes. That's all fine. But this was like, four or five guys in a drug den up on whatever it was.
Those were up in the Donnas, up in Hebrew Heights. Mm. And that's where that stuff did take place. And I recognize that house. Like, if you went up in Studio City, up in the hills, I used to go up and down there all the time because I had friends that are up there.
Saw it at Pack Theater, and that's when I was like, this movie just went to the next level. Like the best possible iteration of this movie.
The genius of that scene were the firecrackers.
Yes.
That
totally unnecessary and totally brilliant.
Totally unnecessary. I would have never thought about it in a million years, but it ratcheted up the tension unbelievably. Yep.
The funny thing about Thomas Jane in that role, it's the same thing as like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. You're like, that's a guy, kind of creepy, not super hot. You're like, that was Matthew McConaughey? Mm-hmm. And you look like Thomas Jane. her. But and then you're like, no. Mm-mm.
He's scheming the whole time with his eyes. That's really great acting in that scene because he's not saying anything, really, but he's just scheming with his eyes.
Well, let's just watch 2 minutes of it because it is so good. In the Rick Springfield song.
Do you remember who the drug dealer was?
Alfred Molina. Alfred Molina. Yeah, he was awesome. It's open kimono robe. And I don't know why, I love the throwaway line of Rick Springfield comes on and that guy's, you can stop it. That guy's a friend of mine.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Hey. We want something else from you.
What? Todd, what the hell are you doing, man? Let's just go.
In the master bedroom. Under the bed, in a floor safe. Understand?
He's trying to play
cool.
What the
fuck is the matter with you, Todd? Let's go. Todd, come on, man.
Shut up, Dirk. I told you I got a plan. I got a very good plan.
Are you kidding me, kid?
Nah, see? I'm not kidding. I want what's in the safe. We want what is in a goddamn safe in a goddamn master bedroom in a fucking floor on a goddamn fucking floor safe. That's all.
Todd, don't be crazy, okay? Sir, you don't know anything about this, okay? This is not at all what we wanted. Shut the fuck up, sir. Do not reach for your gun. Don't reach for your gun.
Oh, that's a good gunshot there.
God, what a scene. This is after 10 minutes of just
build
white knuckling
pure it. Foreplay with firecrackers going off.
Is that 99 Luft Balloons?
Yeah.
That's great.
I wonder if they purposely had Thomas Jane try to look like John Holmes.
Oh. Yeah, he did.
That would make sense.
He did have a John Holmes kind of vibe. Mop on top of his... Alfred Molina was awesome in this scene, too. I love that the car's broken down and they got to bump start it when they run out.
Yeah.
out to it, too.
The window goes out. God, it's so great.
This whole... Come on, this whole scene is just so... so good. All right.
And Jethro Tull in the background.
Is this Tull?
It's called Fat Man.
Oh, it is?
Don't want to be a fat man. People would think I was just good fun.
Never knew that one.
I don't know what percentage of our audience has not seen Boogie Nights. I'm hoping it's less than 20. But get on it, everyone. This is an all-time classic.
All right. Let me tell you about Keeps. More than 50 million men in the U.S. suffer from male pattern baldness. Keeps, a simple, stress-free way to keep your hair convenient. Virtual doctor consultations and medications delivered straight to your door every 3 months in discreet packaging. Low cost starts at just $10 per month. Treatment plans are typically half the cost of pharmacy prices. Proven results. Keeps has more 5-star reviews than its competitors. And you can check out the before and after photos on their website. Look, prevention is key. Treatment can take 4 to 6 months to see results. So act fast and get going with Keeps, right, Dawson?
If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to KEEPS.com/Adam to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/Adam to get your first month free. KEEPS.com/Adam.
Well, the aforementioned Thomas Jane will be on the program right after this. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance, they are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
It's time for Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
I know Kung Fu.
If you said The Matrix.
I know Kung Fu.
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
Thomas Jane is zooming in. The movie Murder at Yellowstone City. It'll be in theaters and VOD tomorrow. As you hear this, it also has Gabriel Byrne in it and Richard Dreyfuss as well. Good to see you, Thomas.
Hey, fellas. How are you?
We're doing well. Congratulations on all the success, all the movies. Followed your career for many years. And even back to Deep Blue Sea.
Love that movie.
Which is a good movie that people kind of forgot about or write off.
Very enjoyable.
Well, you know what happened with that? The Deep Blue Sea opened the same weekend as this little tiny piece of shit called Blair Witch Project.
Don't even know what that is.
A Blair Witch. Do you remember that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that it opened not the same weekend.
Blew the studio away because they just it blindsided them because it was the first sort of internet-based campaign that really got butts in the theater, and the studio didn't know what the hell to do with it. So they actually beat us. They opened number one, and Deep Blue Sea was number two, and that kind of changed the industry right there weekend.
It was a phenomenon, you know what I mean? Like you got swallowed up by a tidal wave. No fault of a fine movie like Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah, a good metaphor to use as well, right. The tidal wave. Yeah, but Blair Witch had a huge budget. You guys were working on a shoestring.
How could you compete?
We struggled. We struggled with the whole damn thing.
I appreciated that Deep Blue Sea used Mako sharks versus the Great White, which is always the default shark in any movie.
Yeah, right? And I remember the studio saying, listen, don't say the J word, Jaws. Don't mention Jaws. Nobody talk about Jaws doesn't exist. There's no such thing as Jaws. And I never figured that out. Like, why? Why are we doing it? Oh, because of the Mako show. We have Mako sharks. I get it.
Richard Dreyfuss has a nice role in this latest film of yours. And I'm trying to think if I've seen him in much lately. Has he been?
Rich has been taking it easy, you know. He's earned it. He's been in some of the greatest movies of all time. He's a spry, witty 70-something-year-old guy now, and just as good as he's always been. Loves the work, loves his job, and I think he's just sort of slowing down a little bit, but he's still got it.
Well, I guess it's a nice testament to the script of your film because he probably doesn't need to work. He's probably getting a little choosy at this stage in his career. And the fact that he decided to come out and work with you is a nice testament to the material, I assume.
It is. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a strong little movie, you know. Westerns are against everybody's better judgment making a comeback right now. And you know, every couple of decades, somebody declares the Western dead, but it still keeps chugging along. It's a great American myth. You know, it's up there with jazz and baseball as truly American creations. And they've of course, beloved worldwide. But, you know, we like other genres, I guess, has their ups and downs, probably because of that, you know.
So you came out, I'm reading here that you dropped out of high school and came out to Los Angeles to act. So you must have been 17, very young when you came out here.
I turned 16 in India. I dropped out of high school, started going to a little acting class that was above a liquor store in Bethesda, Maryland, studied with a great old timer named Ralph Tabakin. Ralph was in silent stuff. He did radio. He did stage, and he was just a good, you know, one of those wonderful character actors. Barry Levinson, who's also from Maryland, used him in somewhere in every one of his movies up until Ralph died. And Ralph gave me the courage to, he said, you know, you're an actor. I was 15. I dropped out of high school. So he called me one day. I was sweeping floors at a Hechinger's, which is a hardware store, on the payphone. And he calls me and he says, Tom, there's these Indians in town. They want you to come and audition for their movie. I said, Indians? Like cowboys and Indians? He said, no, like with the dot on the head. And he sent me down to audition for this Bollywood film, and I got the part. And we traveled all over America, and then I split for India, lived there for 6 months, did another Bollywood film when I was there. They wanted me to stay. They said, you know, you be the American in our Bollywood films. But I had a hankering to go to Hollywood, so I flew back home, packed up my stuff, and drove to California. I turned 17 in San Francisco. I thought that was a good place to study acting. I was wrong. and then drove down to L.A. I turned 18 in L.A. and kind of been here on and off ever since.
You were in India when you were 16 and a half?
I sure was. Yes, sir. I was there. I was 15 and a half. I turned.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. My parents were flipping out. They didn't know what to do with me.
I don't think younger people know how crazy exotic travel was when we were young.
It was off the table.
If I had a friend that went to Yuma, Arizona for 3 days, that exactly. was a big deal. Like, tell us a story. What do the airports smell like? You know, like India and maybe somebody went to England or France. India was crazy exotic, unthinkable. Like, it was much closer from the dawn of civilization, where we could record people moving, taking a boat across the Atlantic or the Pacific, we were much closer to that than we are to India, going to India in 1981 or 85 or whatever it was. It was bizarre and exotic. Like, yeah.
I'd never been outside. I mean, my grandparents lived in upstate New York, and we'd take road trips. But outside of that, I'd never been anywhere. And landing in India at the airport was like landing on Mars. The smell, you know, the dirt, just the beautiful, beautiful people, and everybody staring at me because I had blonde hair and I was white. And they literally, the children would gather around me and just to touch my clothes. I couldn't go anywhere because I had this gaggle of kids that would just surround me all the time. It was life changing. I tell you, I guess the main takeaway from India was that I realized that the American way of life was not the only way to live, that they in India at the time, and this is pretty much before Westernization. I mean, you could barely use a telephone in India in the mid 80s. Everybody spoke a different language. You had to repeat yourself 5 times and the connection was terrible. It felt a little bit like maybe living in the 1920s in America. But the main thing that blew my mind was that their value system, they valued family and friendship above money and things. So they were incredibly happy, most of them, because they had family and friends and community and eating. And that was what they put first. And then the jobs and the careers and all that, and the gathering of stuff it was secondary. It was the reverse of what I've been kind of taught. And that changed my life. And eating with my hands.
Was there any sort of chaperone who was sort of assigned to you in any way? I mean, you were a kid.
Absolutely not. I didn't feel like a kid, but I was a kid. I mean, I look at my daughter, you know, she's 19, and I think, my God, I can't believe what the things I did when I was 15, 16 years old. I would never let my daughter do that.
Right.
You're on your own. I was on my own and treated like an adult and treated like a professional and, you know, really changed my life. It was quite incredible. That and learning all the singing and dancing songs that I had to do for the Bollywood film.
Is any of that stuff still out there? Can we YouTube it?
Can we stream it?
Is it?
I think you can. Yeah, the mother of Harlow, my child, the mother of her for my 30th birthday hunted down a copy of Pavamati Sanjo Ragam, my Indian debut, and played it, you know, in sort of the background, played it at my birthday party. It was something to see, let me tell you. I played myself at 16 and 40. So they gave me a mustache.
Oh, nice.
Gave me a comb over, and I had to learn Telugu, which is the language the film is in. I had to learn it phonetically as if I had grown up and married this Indian woman and spoke fluent Telugu now.
Well, some good news. It is incredibly findable because I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, really? Yes, Brian.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it took a lot of maturity to at 16 to go. I know I'm kind of adored here. Part of it's the novelty of the blonde hair, but it's still nice to have the kids at the hem when I go out in the street. And then there's plenty of work for me here, but I got my sights set on Hollywood. Seemed like a lot of people hang around and hammer checks and be adored for a few years before they cut out. What made you do that?
Gosh, that's a good question. I had a girlfriend at the time and I was in love with her and I knew I wanted to get back to her, but I didn't stay. You know, once I got back, I was there for a couple of months and then I packed up my stuff and took off again. But I just always knew what I wanted to do. And I knew that, you know, I was never going to Telugu was a really tough language to figure out. And so I knew I was never going to really be an Indian Bollywood star. You know what I'm saying?
And your dad or mom is a genetic engineer. I'm reading here.
Yeah, my dad started three companies in biotechnology. He got in on the ground floor in the late 70s, in the 70s. Doing biotech, you know, and so he knows all those, and he sold the equipment and the technology that scientists would use to do their genetic research, and it was the dawn of genetic research. So, quite the guy.
Now, so he seems pretty studious and academic, and you know, that's a guy who's not pursuing the arts per se, but the science. You heading off to India? Like, did your friends come over to the house and goes, Thomas? Can Thomas play? No, was he taking a bath? No, he's in India.
In where now? Indiana?
Taking a bath?
We're going into the 10th grade, Mr. Jane. Yeah, no, he's in India. When's he coming back?
No one knows.
No one knows.
Hard to say.
Hard to say. I mean, did he object terribly to that?
Yeah, it was it was not a discussion that I was going to allow to happen. I actually just and I regret this. It wasn't the proper way to do it, but I just took off one day, you know, and kind of wrote him a letter and said, I'm in India. I knew the resistance was going to be pretty harsh. So and I had my heart set on doing it and I went and did it. You know, my dad appreciates the wherewithal that I had now, but at the time it was pretty dramatic.
So when you came back and then you took off again, where'd you take off again to?
Well, you know, the Indians are notorious for their negotiating skills. So in lieu of paying me money to act in this film, to be the lead in the Bollywood film, the Indian producer said, listen, we're out of money, but the RV that we use to tote around the crew and everybody around the country to make the movie, I don't need it anymore. So it's yours. So sure. I inherited this RV. Me and my pals had fun driving that down the turnpike and hanging out for a while. But it ended up breaking down on the New Jersey Turnpike, and I ended up finding a mechanic that would trade it. He goes, all right, I'll take this off your hands and I'll give you a 69 Camaro convertible in return. So I traded the RV for my 69 Camaro and I painted it matte black, loaded it up with all my stuff and took off for the West Coast. I took off for the West Coast because I was butt poor and I knew that I wouldn't freeze to death on the West Coast. And that's what, you know, it was a choice between New York and enrolling in an acting school there, which I did go to, but they told me I was too young to be a part of the adult program. And of course, I wanted the full-time adult, you know, full experience. And they said no. So I took off and went to the West Coast with about $800 in my pocket.
And you did some street performing back in the day? He's sparking up.
I did just about everything you can. Yeah. I learned, you know, I picked up a guitar for about $50 and that was pretty much some of my last money. And I picked up a couple of chords and I would play it on the street busking. And, you know, people would pay me to go away essentially.
Where did you do your busking? Where, what corner, what was the populace?
That would have been when I got down to LA. I got into a really the kind of hotel that doesn't exist anymore. It was called the White Horse Inn. It was on Western, around Sunset, Western Avenue Boulevard and yeah. Sunset. And it was this old hotel, probably built at the turn of the century. And it was one of those ones you could pay by the month. Mm-hmm. And I was eating by there and I would walk around Sunset Boulevard, Hollywood Boulevard around there. You'd walk into Hollywood, Santa Monica Boulevard that had a wonderful theater row. Mm-hmm. There's these 50 seat theaters all up and down this one stretch of Santa Monica. I think some of them are still there. And I would nose around there and see if anybody needed help or if I could help build a set or if I could hang some lights. And I got involved with a little theater community in Hollywood. And that's where I started doing plays and got seen by a casting director who started, they call it side pocketing, you know, an agent wouldn't really sign you, but they'd slip you stuff every now and then and send you out. And that's how I started getting my first gigs here in Hollywood.
It strikes me that, Sunset and Western was also the home of the Pussycat movie theater back in the day. Yeah. And
that's right.
I'm not saying you're addicted to pornography, but it gets pretty hot out here and those things are air conditioned. Yeah. So nobody.
Well, exactly.
Nobody would judge you if you slid in to just cool down for 7 or 8 hours on a Thursday afternoon. One of the last Pussycats was there.
Oh. By the children's
that's
hospital?
Right.
Yeah.
And you used to be able to do that. Once you paid your ticket, you could come into the middle of a movie and then just sit there and wait and catch the first half of the movie. That was a thing that people used to let you do. And they'd pretty much leave you alone. I've actually done that. I have hung out in movie theaters and slept in the seat and just caught the movie, watched it a couple of times just to get off the street for a while.
Did you ever go into that particular Pussycat theater?
You know, I actually, that's funny you say that. The Pussycat theater was literally right next door to this hotel.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bar. There was the Pussycat theater. And, you know, we used to hang out in the lobby of the hotel. There was one black and white television in this tiny lobby, you know, it would be the size of a large bathroom at a hotel, this lobby. And it would have these old chairs that were broken down and like a orange colored couch that only had three legs. And we would sit in there and stare at this black and white television that had, you know, it was the kind you turn with the dial. It had six channels. None of them came in very well. And the the usher of the Pussycat Theater used to walk over in his uniform in, you know, after he did the tickets and then everybody and the show was playing, he'd wander over and sit down and we'd all watch this black and white television together, watch some old cowboy show or something. I remember that. You're bringing back memories.
This sounds so charming.
He looked a little bit like Lurch. he looked like Lurch from the Adams family. His suit didn't fit right. He had the red usher outfit on with the cap and the white gloves, but none of it fit right. And he'd sit there.
And people don't realize that even in the mid-80s, it's like half the country was still living in the 40s, black and white TVs, cars that were carbureted that broke down all the time. You know, poor people were still living like it was 1947. Microwave ovens, no. Please. Color TVs, no. Reliable transportation, no.
Hand-me-down clothes and kitchenware.
That's how my family was. No credit cards, no nothing. Yeah. It was just kind of cash on the barrel head, watching old black and white Zenith TV, no central air. Maybe a window mounted unit, buzzing away. The refrigerator was no different than the one the grandma had back in the day.
Like might have been the one the grandma had.
Yeah, it was just living in the 40s in the 80s. But speaking of porn, the little
you couldn't cook in your room, but everybody had a little Sterno stove. It's a camping stove, and you'd use that to cook your breakfast. It's true.
Damn.
Smoke wherever you wanted. Speaking of pornography, Boogie Nights, we just went over how much we loved you in that movie and the scene with Alfred Molina and the firecrackers. And it's one of my favorite all-time scenes. And you were just put on a clinic in that because you looked high as a kite and you looked simultaneously super aggressive and powerful and nervous as shit
and beleaguered
at the same time. How did that whole thing come about? It's one of my favorite all-time movies.
Well, I read that. Somebody slipped me that script and I read it and thought it was fantastic. But that scene in particular really stood out. And they were having open calls, for looking for actors. And I specifically said, I want to audition for Todd Parker. I really like this part. It's really cool. And I went down there and got myself an audition. Ended up getting a call back with John C. Reilly and Philip Seymour Hoffman. And it was just the three of us. And what the director, Paul Thomas Anderson, was doing was he was trying out different combinations of actors to see who would fit together. And I remember that audition, it just kind of devolved into an improv. And we started improvising and it all just kind of came to life. And, Paul was wise enough to hire us all as being that kind of gang. He used to run around. There was an office, I guess it was the production offices, and he had one of those big, he used to record them on tape, the video cameras with the tape, and he'd just run around and film us in character, So we did a lot of, I guess you'd call it rehearsals like that, but it was really just Paul chasing us around with a camera. He probably still has that somewhere, that videotaped footage of the actors who'd be running around the production office in character doing goofy stuff.
John C. Reilly and Philip Seymour Hoffman weren't householdy names
Hoffman for sure.
Back then, no. Were they?
You might recognize Philip Seymour Hoffman from
Twister?
I was going to say the Al Pacino, Sense of a Woman. He was one of the kids in that movie, but he wasn't a household name at all.
And what was John C. Reilly up to back then? Did you know those guys? Had you worked with them?
No. We all met on that show and, we hung out for a long time. We were pals you get together in New York, there'd be a certain cafe where all the actors would hang out and they'd show up and we'd wander in and out or maybe go catch a the second half of a theater play together, or we'd be auditioning for the same Broadway play. And, you know, it was sort of like this unit of young, hungry actors that were out there hitting the streets. And we, over the years, you know, and then we all got married and had kids and went about with our careers. But those are good times.
If I may, I'm a big Thomas Jane fan. I'm a big fan of your career. I loved your cameo in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Highlight of the movie. Thanks. Really enjoyable. My favorite Thomas Jane movie and role is The Mist. You are fantastic. Mm-hmm. The movie lives and dies on your shoulders, frankly. You're great. Marcia Gay Harden's great. That's a Frank Darabont movie on a Stephen King novel, so the same duo that brought a Shawshank. But famously, I'd always heard the ending was reworked from the novel to make it more bleak, and that is a bleak ending. I don't want to give away what happens, but what was your understanding of how that came about?
Yeah, that was a script. Frank and I had met over our love for comic books and comic book artists, and we were both huge Bernie Wrightson fans, and we'd both become pals with Bernie. He's one of they call him the master of the macabre. He's just an outstanding illustrator and one of a group of guys that I used to run around with. And that's how I got to know Frank, because we both had a real passion for and love for the art of illustration. And Frank's script showed up on my porch one day, and Frank said, "Hey, you know, I want to make this movie. See what you think of it." And I read it, and it had that ending. And I said, "Man, this is amazing. You know, of course I want to be involved, but how are you going to pull this ending off?" And he said, "Well, we got it with the Weinstein Company, and they offered me double the budget if I changed the ending to a less bleak ending. They said, listen, with this ending, we can only give you half the money." And we all agreed that we could make the movie for that much and we could pull it off. And that's what we all wanted to do. Everybody was pretty adamant about keeping that ending, which was different than the short story. And I had dinner with Stephen King and Darabont while we were shooting, I think. And King said, he said, you know, we asked him, you know, "So what do you think? We kind of changed your ending a little bit." And he said, "You know, if I'd have thought of that, that's the ending I would have wrote."
That's the seal of approval.
It's incredibly memorable, of course, but I can see how it would have hurt business. It's not an ending you're going to tell us. "Oh, you got to see The Mist. It ends on such a great note."
The sad part about that was, the Weinstein Company decided that the perfect day to release The Mist would be Thanksgiving Day weekend. The weekend known for families eating a big, and then going out to the movies. It was a huge family weekend. Not the greatest time to release that film.
I'm seeing a pattern developing here with the movie release.
Blair Witch 2 dropped that weekend. Thomas, let me give you a plug. Murder at Yellowstone City. It's in theaters and on VOD tomorrow as you hear this. Thomas does not make bad movies, and his streak is still alive. Always good to talk to you, my friend, and I hope we can get caught up whenever you have something else to talk about.
Oh, that'd be great, fella. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Good stuff. The great Thomas Jane. Thank God I know where all the Pussycat Theaters are. Sometimes I have to run out of my car and check my laminated map with the red dots on it.
You hide in the Thomas Guide.
Sprung to mind.
So all right, is it literally by where the Children's Hospital is now? I'm thinking of Sunset and Western.
If you're heading toward Western on Sunset, and you pass the Home Depot, which wasn't there, but I think the Builder's Emporium was on the other side.
Got it.
Yep, you get to Western, you make a left, and you stop and pull your dick out. Because it's right. You make a little jog, and you're right there.
I see.
Now, I don't know if they, obviously.
By the Payless.
The other one, which used to be the Guild, it's kind of one of those, it's kind of interesting. So, North Hollywood, if you want to just talk in terms of like cycles, North Hollywood was like a nice little suburban, anywhere kind of middle America, you know, middle class folk kind of environment. And when it was, it had the Guild and the El Portal on mm-hmm. Lancashire, where NoHo mm-hmm. is now. And they're both big high ceilings and big chandeliers and very 1930s, mm-hmm. big gilded era of when they would really build a theater versus the, you know, 18 cinder block boxes. Yeah. And so there was a guild in the El Portal. And the neighborhood started to turn, went south, Lancashire went south. And how you know it went south is the guild turned into a pussycat.
God damn it.
It's also weird. It's also weird when the porn theater's majestic. Look at those turn of the century sconces. I'm beating off.
Look at that crown molding.
I mean, it was... Oh, a gold leaf.
That's wow. not crown molding.
I mean, it was majestic. Big wow. balcony up top. Not we don't sit right under the
no.
balcony.
No.
And it's funny. The porn theater never had handicap seating.
You'd think.
I had a friend.
I had a friend who
ended up getting a job as the ticket taker there. So
what a day for you.
That was gold. Or some other color for me. So that turned into, so the neighborhood was nice and it was a big, beautiful guild theater. The neighborhood went south. It turned into a pussycat theater. Later on, they resurrected the neighborhood and now it's just like a big industrial, I think they built it like the Hewlett Packard building or something. So it came back or something, or it's a they busted up and put a bunch of sushi places
but it follows the trajectory. Now it's just corporate whatever.
Yeah, now they're doing wood fired pizza space that it was. So if you just kind of follow the theaters, you can follow the neighborhood. Of course, the Pussycat on Santa Monica, right mm-hmm. by Boys Town, mm-hmm. became the
Tomcat.
Yeah.
They know their audience. Right, they finally got hip to it.
You can figure out how a neighborhood going by what's going on with the theaters then and now. And yeah, it seems so weird and quaint in the 40s. Those theaters must have been built. And then up the street, the El Portal, which we've done some live shows at, that hit the skids for a while. And then they brought it back as a live music and theater venue, I think. So
we did a podcast there early on in the podcast.
In 2016. It was the same weekend as my anniversary show. Like
your brother was there.
How do you remember that?
How do you
miss that? I can't. Does it still haunt your dreams?
Still scared.
Yeah.
So he, I was like, Chrissy, put the chair down. He's family.
Right. She was lion tamer.
Keep your distance. We've done podcasts there. Yeah. I've done stand-up shows there. I think Sarah Silverman shot a special there. If I somehow recall, you can kind of tell by the seats. This is us up there.
With Soledad O'Brien.
Yeah, so they brought that place back, and now they're doing. And I think, Reynolds, what's her name's mom?
Debbie Reynolds
was doing like her live whatever show there for
a
while.
How did I miss that?
Yeah, you did miss that.
Damn.
All right, let me tell you about Geico. Like to save a little money on your insurance? Of course you would. Who doesn't love a deal? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV. Even homeowners, condo, or renters coverage as well, and you can save because they got specials and they got discounts, and you can bundle those coverages as well. Plus, you add the easy to use Geico mobile app for 24-hour roadside assistance. Switch Geico; it's a no brainer. Switch today. See just how much you could save when you switch to Geico. All right. Let's see. Comedian Hannah Berner is going to join us. She's a comedian. She's a host. She's a tennis player. Second tennis player in a row to join the show. We'll talk to her right after this.